Good afternoon and welcome to the Healthy Families Subcommittee meeting. I am glad to see all these bright and shiny faces here this afternoon and lots of wonderful young people that I hear. I've got a stack of appearance cards and I'm delighted that you all are going to share the afternoon with us, and hopefully we will hear some good stories from you today. I'd like to remind anybody who has anything that buzz, beeps, makes honks, makes noise, or whatever, please silence them, turn them off so that we can complete our business as planned. And with that, with the administrative assistant, please call the roll.
Chair Harrell?
Here.
Representatives Berman?
Here.
Fitzenhagen?
Here.
Jones?
Here.
Perry?
Here.
Peters?
Here.
Pigman?
Here.
Powell?
Here.
Pritchett?
Here.
Rader?
Here.
Rodriguez?
Here.
Rooney?
Here.
Trujillo?
Here.
Quorum is present.
Thank you very much. And today, members, we have two very important bills that I am delighted to bring to you. We have first House Bill 215 dealing with dependent children, and then we'll hear House Bill 317 dealing with mental health issues. And with that, Representative, let me see, who is doing which one? Okay, we're doing Albritton first. Okay. Representative Albritton, you are recognized to present House Bill 215, Dependent Children.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's good to see you. I don't see as much of you as I'd like to. Seems like this year, or good afternoon. Good afternoon, members. I want to start off on this bill to just tell you a little bit about, quite frankly, its evolution. I remember when Alan with the Garden Ad Litem program brought me this bill. He went through the challenges that were going on in the system with me. They were completely non-common sense kind of things. And I looked at him, and I don't know if you remember this, Alan, and I said, really? Really? Is it that way? Well, here's what's happened. Over the past years, rightfully so, the state has taken the prerogative to keep kids safe in the foster care program. And I don't believe any of us would say that is wrong. However, what has happened in that goal to keep kids safe, we haven't allowed kids to live as normal life as possible. So we're working to keep them safe, but they're put into situations to where, and you'll hear some of the stories today, where, you know, a kid's not allowed to get a driver's license because the foster parent's concerned. Or they aren't allowed to go to play in a football game, aren't even allowed to participate in sports at all. And folks, I'd tell you, friends, that's wrong. It shouldn't be that way. These kids have gone through significant struggles in their life. And if there's anything that I've ever come in contact with in my short legislative career that can be a bipartisan solution, a real-time, real impactful solution to make lives better, this bill is it. No question about it. So, Madam Chair, I know we have three amendments. And
let's put the bill in proper posture, and we will go ahead and let's go with amendment number one, please.
Okay. Amendment number one is purely a technical revision to the bill. It changes the reference from an administrative code to the actual statutes that deal with the licensing of out-of-home care. It's proper and effectively standard to use statute as the reference point if it's there instead of administrative code, so it's purely technical.
Are there any questions on the amendment? Is there any public testimony on the amendment? Is there any debate on the amendment? Is there any objection to the amendment? Hearing no objection, the amendment is passed. Amendment number two.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment provides greater clarity, which is incredibly important, greater clarity so that misinterpretations do not take place on what is meant by the best interest of the child. That is the amendment.
Are there questions on the amendment? Is there public testimony on the amendment? Is there debate on the amendment? Is there objection to the amendment? Seeing no objection, the amendment is passed. You're recognized to present amendment number three.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. This also provides greater clarity on the department on rulemaking that's allowed in this part of the statute as it relates to normalcy, and it also defines the reasonable and prudent parent standard by referencing the statute that actually deals with that, so it also allows that there would be less potential for there to be a misinterpretation.
Are there questions on the amendment? Is there public testimony on the amendment? Is there debate on the amendment? Is there objection to the amendment? Seeing no objection, the amendment is passed. Now we're back on the bill as amended. Any further explanation of the bill, Representative Albritton?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure that it really is. I mean, at the end of the day, this bill is about making sure that kids in the foster care system have the ability to live as normal a life as possible. And quite honestly, I think we as human beings, we and concerned legislators, they deserve that chance, and we're deserving of this opportunity to be able to begin this bill on its path through the legislature to accomplish that and love on these kids from our perspective the way that we're supposed to.
Members, are there any questions on the bill as amended? And I know we do have some significant public testimony on the bill. Okay. I have a whole group of young people that would like to testify, and if you all want to just kind of come up and gather around, I have Thomas Fair, I have Shea Nugent, and Thomas is from the Florida Youth Shine, and Shea Nugent is a former foster youth. I have Brian Williams, a former foster youth. I have Jacob Irving, and come on down. Brian Williams, Jacob Mays. No, it's Jacob and Ed, Guardian Ad Litem. Okay, I thought he was one of the foster kids. Mary Gaspar, who is current foster child. Kiara Perkins. Lacey Shaw. Caprice Blizzard. Jody Sutton. Now, who would like to speak first? Okay. Come on down.
Hello.
State your name, and you are recognized.
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Kiera Perkins. I am a member of the Jacksonville chapter of Florida Youth Shine. I was in foster care for 10 years. I am in favor of this bill, and one reason why is because when I was about 6 or 7 years old, I was in the summer camp, and we were going on a field trip to the beach, but I couldn't go for whatever reason. My foster mom didn't feel, you know, it was necessary, or she didn't want to be responsible, or didn't want anyone else held responsible if anything happened to me, and I couldn't understand why I couldn't go. You know, even though I was 6 or 7 years old, there were other 6 and 7 year olds going too, so I felt like, you know, someone is watching them. I'm sure they'll watch me, too. They won't just, you know, not watch me. So, you know, that's something I never really understood. And, you know, now when I go to the beach, I always, you know, every time I go, I think about when I was 6 or 7 years old and I couldn't go, and how my best friend, I'll never forget her, Shakira, came back and told me about their trip to the beach and how she built the sandcastle with the buckets and stuff, and you know how I missed out on that. So I think this bill will really eliminate all of that and help people, help the kids, and enjoy their life and do stuff with their friends. So thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thank you very much. Who would like to be next?
My name is Lacey Shaw, and good afternoon. I was in foster care for 4 years from the time I was 15 to 18, and I'm in favor of the Normalcy Bill 125. And during my time in care, I was able to participate in many activities, but they all had to be supervised. So I did not get to stay the night with my friends, and I wasn't allowed to go to the mall myself or drive my car myself and things like that. And I think that this Normalcy Bill is important because all those type of activities are important for a teen to accomplish when they're in high school and things like that. So I'm in favor of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Jacob Irving. I'm a member of the Circuit 1 chapter of the Florida USHON. I was in foster care in Pensacola, Florida for 2 years, and I'm in favor of this bill because it just feels weird when you really have to ask for like a background check to go spend the night with a friend, and they approve it, but then it's like it becomes weird, and you feel like I felt like a lesser person, and we just want to feel normal. We feel like different people when we literally have to ask people and get it approved to spend the night with someone. And I'm a favor of this bill.
Thank you very much.
How's everybody doing? My name is Jacob Mays. I aged out of foster care. I'm 20 now, and I went in when I was 14. I know it's not just us that also don't like the fact that we have to ask for background checks and go through the fingerprints with our friends and everything. Because my foster father, before, we would talk about it, and he would actually have to break the rules a little bit. He didn't like having to do it, but he would do it just to make it feel normal so that we didn't have to go and say, do you mind if we get a background check? And a lady's going to come here, and we need you to come down to this office, down on Gun Club, to get your fingerprint scanned. I mean, that's a lot to ask somebody. And then their parents are asking you, like, well, why are you in foster care? And you got to kind of explain your life story, which sometimes you're not comfortable saying, or you don't even fully understand. So I think the normalcy plan, like, this will give the foster parents, they don't have to keep that a secret and have to feel like they're breaking a rule just to actually give us something that should already be there. We should be able to feel normal. Not just because a bad situation happened and put us, you know, in foster care. I don't think it makes us any different from any other kid, but I think this bill will really help out a lot, so I support it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Shay Nugent. I was in foster care from 7 to 14, and I remember that things were already not normal enough because I moved around so much. And then when a friend would ask me if I could stay after school, or, hey, join this sport with me, or, hey, come to my house for my birthday party, I just remember all the hoops I had to jump through and had to get background checks. And then there was questions from that because, you know, they didn't know that I was in foster care. And then they would ask questions. Their parents would ask questions. And, I mean, I didn't know I was going to be adopted at the time at the age of 14. So I remember thinking, you know, what am I going to do when I'm 16 and I can't get my license? Or, like, in high school, you know, that's a big issue. So I'm very much in favor of this bill.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Brian Williams. I've been in foster care for 4 years. I'm currently attending TCC. I'm also a part of a youth organization called Florida Youth Shine, the FAF program, and I also volunteer with the GAF. I want to give a thanks to the committee. I also want to give a special thanks to Al Britton for supporting this bill. I always loved football. I always loved sports. I never encountered a situation where I couldn't, you know, participate in the extra curriculums, and my caseworker always supported me with the things I needed for me to participate in the extra curriculum. But if I was told no, I would be very upset that I couldn't, you know, participate in these things, because then I wouldn't feel normal. I would feel like I didn't have any freedom. That's why I support this bill.
Are you playing football now?
No, ma'am.
No. Go Gators.
Good afternoon. My name is Mary Gaspar, and I met with a couple of you before, so just want to say it's an honor to be here and to speak to you guys. I'm in favor of this bill because I'm still in foster care, and I've been in foster care since I was 8 years old. And, of course, when I was with my family, even though it wasn't the best, I was able to go with my friends. I was able to do things. And when I got into foster care, and I remember the first time I asked to go out to a sleepover, I wasn't allowed to, because my foster mother would have to put her license on the line, and she was not going to do it. And so I didn't understand why other people had to get background checks for me to be able to sleep over, to come over, when in a reality, foster care, sometimes they do say, you know, we're trying to make you feel as normal as possible. We already don't feel normal because we don't have parents. We don't have a mother. We don't have a father. So for us not to be able to go out with friends, which friends would be kind of more stable, it's kind of like you don't feel normal. And You don't want to tell your friends, hey, look, I'm in foster care. You don't want to put your business out there because you don't know what they might say. So when they start asking questions like, why can't you sleep over? Why does my mom need a background check? First of all, it's a lot to ask for the other parent, and it's a lot of questions that they have to ask you, and you might not want to answer all of that. So I'm in favor of this bill, only because I feel like every child, no matter what your situation, no matter what your background is, you should be able to do anything that any other kid should do, and you shouldn't be told no because of a law that they don't want to get in trouble for. Because if you were with your regular parents, you would be able to do it. And if something were to happen, it would be your parents' fault. And I feel like if they give your foster parent the responsibility to take care of you, they should be able to give them the responsibility to be able to say no and yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Members, do you have any questions for our wonderful? Do we have any more kids who want to speak? I got one more. Come on down.
Just one, please.
Just absolutely.
Hello.
Yes,
everybody.
We met you last week, and yes. Thank you for being here again.
Nice to be here again. I'm Thomas Fair. I'm 22 years old. Part of the Salisbury chapter of Florida USHON. I've been in foster care for 12 years. I'm in favor of this bill. Also, thank you for sponsoring the bill. And so I had three short stories. Hopefully it won't take so long. But I met a gentleman whenever I was growing up, me and a foster brother of mine, and he took a real good liking to us, just like one of y'all probably would take a liking to us if you met us on the street. And he wanted to help us and put us in the community, let us meet different things and go out places with his kids when they go camping and go to out-of-town events and to restaurants. And we were never able to go. And he'll go to my group home and say, you know, can we take them? And they'll be like, look, sir, with all due respect, you don't have a background check, you don't have fingerprints. And they told him the process it took to go through it. And he told me, like, he's like, look, man, I'm busy a lot. So, I mean, it would have been great to have that experience. The second one would have been, there's two major events that go on inside Tallahassee, which is the FAMU and Florida State Homecoming. And those are two of some of the most major events that us in the group home always wanted to go to. And all the brothers used to get prepared and ready. Our friends would call and talk to us, say, hey, are you coming? We think we're coming. And none of us were ever allowed. And I was saying, I quote, like from the director's mouth, was, if something happened to you guys while you're out there, you know, my butt would be grass. And I was, from you guys growing up, I'm pretty sure that whenever you go speak to friends or have icebreakers and we talk to people, sometimes it's that experience that you experienced in life that kind of helps out the situation or helps you with growing and wanting to pursue other things in life. The third one was growing up, when I first got into my last group home when I was 16, I made it my top priority to get a driver's license. I told them right when I got in, that was my goal. So I was never able to, they said it was going to be a real hard a hurdle for me to get that, to obtain that, because they couldn't get insurance on me, they couldn't find a car for me to drive in. So a gentleman at the group home took it upon himself to let me drive his car, to learn how to drive, to gain that experience, and to give me that. And then on my 18th birthday, he took me down to the DMV, and I got me some license. And I was the first person in my group home to ever be able to do that, and I felt very proud to be able to have done that. In addition to that, after I got my car, I wanted to take some of my little brothers out with me whenever I went to town and stuff, and I was unable to. And they said the same exact thing, like me even getting a license, he told me, it's like if something happened with you with one of those kids in your car, same scenario like going to the homecoming. So something to keep in mind that I always think of is that one day y'all were kids growing up, and I'm pretty sure all of us would appreciate if you could treat us, or if we could be allowed to do things as a kid that y'all did and had those experiences. Thank you.
Did we get everybody? Okay. Terrific. Thank you, kids. I so appreciate all your testimony. Okay, we have now Katie Black from Our Kids of Miami. Jack Levine, founder of Four Generations Initiative. Jeff Bates.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Committee. I appreciate the opportunity to be here and speak with you today on this very, very important normalcy bill. Thank you, Representative Albritton. I appreciate it. I stand for you today as a company employee of just about 25 years. aged out of foster care 30 years ago. Everything that I've heard today is something that I did not experience, because my foster parents took it upon themselves to treat me normal. I'm not sure if they broke the rules. I'm not sure if rules changed since 1982 or 1971. But I do know that within 72 hours of moving into that foster home, I was playing in Cub Scouts, my back next door neighbor. Within 18 months, I was in softball or baseball, City League. A few years later, I played football, again, City League. And there was never a problem with extracurricular activities or leading a normal life, however normal is defined by each of us. And I don't think that any of my brothers and sisters who are sitting here, and all the ones throughout Florida who have to go through the bureaucratic process to get permission to stay there, I don't think that's right. They should be treated normal. I stand here, as I say, as a company employee after 25 years. I think living a normal childhood is the very best we can strive to do for our foster children, and that is, in fact, the goal that our leaders here have set for all of the laws for child welfare. And I think that a normal childhood gives all of us the ability to deal with whatever comes our way. And finally, just as a final thought, I want to pose a question. What changed in 30 years that we've done as a society, as a legislature, as state employees? What has changed in 30 years that prevents some of these young folks from getting a haircut with their guardian ad litem, or going to prom, or getting their learner's permit or driver's license? What's changed? I don't think anything's changed. I think we all care. We all want to do everything we can to help. But I think we've gone a little overboard in wrapping all of these kids in bubble wrap. And in some cases, we've tied the hands of foster parents who do provide reasonable and prudent parenting. That decision-making is not something that is taken lightly. This legislature gave these parents that chore, that responsibility, and it should be recognized in statute. Again, I fully support this legislation. I think it's awesome legislation. Thank you. And with that, I close my remarks. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you. Alan Abramowitz from the Guardian Ad Litem.
First, I'd like to thank you, Representative Albritton. I'd also like to thank Tanya Wilkins, who is chairing the Fostering Florida's Families group to retain foster parents. One of the problems with recruitment of foster parents is we need more foster homes. And she put me over a subcommittee to look at legislation. And the foster parents who were part of this group, and they were providers, they said, the thing that will keep me here and stay as a foster parent longer, you give me these kids to have 24 hours a day, yet I can't make decisions. And they said they want the foster parents, this was actually the Foster Parent and Adoption Association, they want to parent these kids. That's why they get into this. They love these kids. And so, thanks.
Next, we'll hear from Debbie Robbins.
I am a guardian ad litem and also a mentor. And since I've been in the system working with these children, one thing that amazed me the most was how abnormal their lives are. And not even talking about the beach or the mall, I'm talking about Mary sometimes has to be pulled out of school to go to court, to speak to a judge, to tell her how her life is. She's had caseworker upon caseworker changing. Sometimes she feels like a tenant in her own home. But these are things we can't change. This is the foster system. But the things we can change that will make them feel more normal will help them with their self-esteem. I don't have the numbers here, but it's alarming the number of foster kids who end up in jail, end up homeless, end up on drugs, end up never going to college or not graduating high school. And most therapists will tell you kids that go off the path, it's because they don't have the self-esteem. They don't feel good about themselves. And I think passing this law will help kids from the very beginning feel better about themselves. even though they're in a very abnormal situation. So I think it's urgent that we pass this.
Thank you. Next we'll hear from Alexandria Carol Mayes Sheckman.
Hello, everyone. I come from a very loving family, very strict Greek Orthodox family, just like my big fat Greek wedding. I'm the living proof of that. My parents were extremely overprotective. I'm an only child. And there were many times that I was not allowed to do everything all these foster children said that they couldn't do. And being it that I came from a very normal family, very loving family, middle class family, I felt awkward and horrible and out of place because of it. I can only imagine these foster children being without loving parents and how they feel in front of other kids when they come in on a Monday after the weekend and everybody talks about everything that they've done and all their activities and their devastation of not being a part of life, a part of the world. So I was able, it was not a, you know, that big of a deal for me because my parents would, you know, come with me to a lot of things and I had family members to take me, so I overcame that, but I can only imagine how these children feel, and I feel this is very important for them to be able to live normal lives because the rest of what they come from is not normal. Thank you.
Thank you. Next we'll hear from Brandy Leo. Thank you. Florida Youth Shrine. Next we'll hear from Christina Spadeus. Raven Support. Great. I think I have everybody. Representative Albritton. Is there a debate on the bill? Members, debate on the bill. Representative Rader, you're recognized.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I'll tell you, this is just unbelievable testimony, and I know we just briefly spoke before the bill with the committee, with the member who's sponsoring the bill, and I wrote down the testimony and some of the things. Couldn't go to the mall, couldn't drive a car, couldn't see their friends, spend night with a friend, felt like a lesser person. This is just, feels like it's prison in a way. And, you know, I had some appointments in my office, and I'll tell you, in my previous time in the legislature and being, you know, observant to the process for many years, this is like one of the most important bills I can actually ever think about. And one of the things I did when I was sitting here is I texted my aide to say I want to co-sponsor the bill immediately. So I thank you for bringing up this important bill. And I should say, even going forward, you know, we saw the last meeting, Madam Chair, you know, things like foster care kids only have 3% have driver's licenses. This seems like it's one of the big reasons why only 3% have driver's licenses. And some of those statistics are skewed because of something like this. It seems like this really skews a lot of it, actually. And I'm a little bit surprised why some of the speakers in our previous meeting didn't know about this or didn't bring this up, that this had to be done. So in a way, I kind of want to apologize for all the kids who are in foster care for all these years, for decades. I just spoke briefly before this meeting. I said, why hasn't this been done, you know, a decade ago or 2 decades ago? And to be talking about it now in committee like this is far too late. So thank you for bringing up this really great bill, and I'm proud to hopefully be a co-sponsor.
Thank you very much. Any further questions, members? Representative Rodriguez.
I just want to thank Representative Albritton for bringing this bill forward, and also want to thank all the young people that came up and shared their experiences with us. It's one thing for us to look at this in theory. It's another thing to hear from the people that have lived through this and can share their firsthand experience with us. And I want to commend you for bringing it forward, and also want to acknowledge not only is it important to restore as much normalcy as we can to the kids that are in this process, but I want to thank you for the third part of your bill, which changes the standard to the best interest of the child. For a period of time, I served as a guardian ad litem in Lee County, and I can't tell you how important it is to have that as a standard. So thank you for bringing that forward.
Further debate, members? Further debate. Well, thank you, Representative Albritton, for doing a great bill. With that, I welcome your close.
Okay. Well, I'm going to make this very, very quick. First of all, you guys are very courageous. Thank you for being here today. Thank you for all the support that's here in this room. Of all the bills that I've run, to your point, Representative Rader, to all the bills that I've run since I've been here, this is clearly the most important thing I have ever touched. And I think right now we have a golden opportunity to show the citizens in this state, the foster care system in this state, court system in the state, and quite frankly, more importantly, the foster kids in this state, that helps on the way. I'd encourage your support.
And with that, would the administrative assistant please call the roll?
Representatives Berman?
Yes.
Fitzenhagen?
Yes.
Jones?
Yes.
Perry?
Yes.
Peters?
Yes.
Pigman?
Yes.
Powell?
Yes.
Pritchett?
Yes.
Rader?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Rooney?
Yes.
Trujillo?
Yes.
Chair Harrell?
Yes. And by your vote, members, House Bill 215 will move forward. Congratulations.
Thank you, member.
And thank you, kids, for being here. Next, we'll hear House Bill 317, Mental Health, by Representative Schwartz.
Thank you very much. That was a testament to a wonderful group of people. And I don't think they were half as nervous as I am. Even though, in fact, I presented this bill four times last year and it passed the House. It's a bill that is helping to decriminalize folks who are in the mental illness arena. And I'll go into more detail. And there is a strike all.
Yes. Why don't we go ahead and address the strike all rather than explain the bill?
Right. The strike is easy to explain because I had submitted the bill that passed the House last year, and then there was some discussion about making changes. And those changes were made and were filed in the Senate by Senator Sobel, but we have to conform this to the Senate version. And there are a couple of points of where those the changes are. First is that there's a period of time of 5 years right now when an individual has to come back after having been put in a forensic facility, and they have to have hearings, to status hearings, to see if they still should remain there or whether they should go back into the criminal system, because they've restored their competency. That is a long time to have hearings when they're really not necessary. After 3 years, the statistics are 99% of people who haven't had their competency restored by then do not have it done. And so that is added back into the bill because it was left out. In addition, I'm trying to think, there's another point about in the strike all, but I'll go into those details afterwards. Basically, is just to conform it to the Senate.
Okay. Are there questions on the strike all, members? Is there testimony on the strike all? Is there debate on the strike all?
Oh, sure.
Great. Okay. We do have a testimony on the strike all itself. We have Dan Hendrickson.
Dan Hendrickson, Assistant Public Defender, 301 South Monroe Street. Chairwoman knows if it were later in session, I'd waive my time in support of the bill and the strike-off, since this did come up at this point, and because it's a part of what may be other amendments that you all will be seeing, and I don't know very many of you. I'm a public defender who has been working on mental health cases for more than 20 years, similar to people in your districts. And just to let you know that this bill is fairly modest. It's very important in what it's doing, but there's been several other proposals and more comprehensive legislation that's come through one house or the other over the last two or three years And these parts that are coming today are important, and we'd appreciate the opportunity to continue working with the staff. And we come over here, I come over here as a volunteer on top of my caseload whenever issues about the mental health cases or forensic defendants comes up. But working with the department and the sponsor, as this bill may need some other changes there. You may hear things from different circuits around the state. You can imagine defendants and the jail situations and the different courts around the state are a little different. There may be some unintended consequences to some details that different PDs or state attorneys or judges may bring to y'all's attention. Just know that this has been a bill and piece of legislation that's been in the works now for several years with a lot of people who have spent a lot of very considerable and thought-provoking work groups and a lot of time putting it together in order to try to decrease the decompensation and the number of times that people are in and out of jails with no medications, and they go to the hospital and stay off medications for a lengthy period of time. And for many of our clients, the one personal thing I'll add is I may be speaking to the same defendant three times in a week's period and hear three different attitudes towards his medications, and that's understandable. What it means is that the questions about the decision being made by the defendant himself, the decision being made by a brand new doctor or a treatment team somewhere, or someone who knows that defendant's history, what meds have worked over the years, which treatment has been able to help them get back into the community safely and try to keep the family together, means that we do need to have as much continuity of care as we can do in these times of budget cuts. But the changes in the formularies are disastrous for many of our defendants, not only whether they have charges or not, but for many of the patients that you're going to be hearing from the DCF people, civil as well as criminal. And so please resist those formularies, because sometimes some meds work differently for different bodies, and we need to be respecting that. The fact that this bill will encourage the jails and the hospitals to work more closely together is bound to have I mean, it was sort of understated in the fiscal. I think this is going to have a good fiscal impact because it's going to reduce the number of defendants that have to go bouncing back and forth and going through periods of what is very horrendous experience of being off the meds and in jail. So thank you. And if there are
thank
other questions,
you.
I'll be...
Any questions? Thank you very much. Is there a debate on the strike all amendment? Is there objection to the strike call amendment? Seeing no objection, the strike call amendment has passed. You're recognized now to explain the bill further.
Okay, great. Thank you, Chair Harrell and Vice Chair Ferry and Ranking Member Berman, for hearing this bill, because it is important. It is something that will help. Now, Mr. Henderson, is it? Is that? He was speaking to a part of the bill that is very significant about medication, and that's in the body of the bill. That is, you'll have a person who is in the criminal justice system who has been stabilized or is taking medication, and when it's determined that they're incompetent to stand trial or that they're not guilty by reason of being incompetent, they move into the forensic system, and they then are not kept on the same medication, because the psychiatrists at the forensic institution, if they don't take their medication, cannot force them to without court order. And there is a procedure to get them onto their meds, but this bill allows them to not be destabilized, to allow the forensic psychiatrist to give them the same medication that they were on in the jail, and so that they do have to go for a hearing. They have to get it within a certain period of time. It's all controlled, but it will keep them from just falling apart before they get into the forensic. So that is one part of the bill. There are two other parts of the bill. One is going the other way. When someone is in a forensic facility and they are their competency is restored, they can move back into the criminal justice system and be faced trial. And in that case, this bill gives a time limit for hearings to do it quickly, so that it's not someone just sitting around and keeping people in the forensic facility when they really belong in the criminal justice system. So there are two sides of the same coin. There was a a portion of the bill that was dropped out, that was in the strike rule too, which was to have additional training for those people to evaluate them, and it was decided that though that passed the House last year, it really was not necessary, so that was dropped out. And I did mention the part about the 2 to 5 year changing the 5 year term for dismissing a course of action against someone who is not competent to down to 3 years. And so that's something that will save the public defender, the state attorney, the judges from continuing to have it. And the main point is it doesn't stop the person from the state attorney from refiling the case if the defendant or patient does regain their competency. So they'll get back into the system if they have to. So if you have any questions,
are there questions, members? Representative Pigment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I may indulge, there's two questions that I have. The first question concerns lines 42 and 43. I think this is an excellent bill, Representative Swartz, and I think it's very necessary and timely. On line 42, we talk about the admitting physician at the forensic facility who may order. And I like that word may because it authorizes but does not compel. That's good. But what concerns me is in line 43, we have the before psychotherapeutic medication, which, and I may be wandering way far into the weeds on this, but that would imply to me same medication, same dose, no substitution. And I'm a little bit concerned if the admitting physician at the forensics facility is given the authority to order but not make a dosage change nor perhaps a substitution related to what's available. And I wonder if instead of the psychotherapeutic medication, it could just be changed to psychotherapeutic medications. In other words, getting rid of the article the and putting a plural, if that would be acceptable.
Representative Pigman, you do, as a committee member, have the ability to do an amendment in the committee at this time if you would like to, and I don't know whether that would be considered a favorable amendment or a hostile amendment on the part of the chair. But as a member of the committee, you can offer amendments at any time during the committee meeting, during the committee hearing of this bill. So, Representative Swartz, would you like to comment on that, and would you entertain such an amendment at this point?
Well, the bill was proposed by DCF, and their determination was that it should be the same as was given in the jail, just to keep consistency. I don't know if someone...
Do we have someone from DCF who would like to address that particular aspect?
I don't think it's unfriendly. I think it's a great idea, but the process is still there to change things, but that requires a hearing. You don't just change medication. So that's really something that you guys have more familiarity with every day.
Okay. State your name for the record and we fill out an appearance card for us.
Gentlemen. Tim Parson, I'm with Department of Children and Families Legislative Affairs, and it seems like the department would be fine with that, it is a friendly amendment if that change is something that the committee agrees upon today.
Okay. Representative Pigman, did you care to do that at this point, or do you want to wait till the next committee hearing to do that, whatever your pleasure is?
I would like to move that as an amendment.
We have a form that needs to be filled out. We're drafting it right now. So let's move forward. We'll contemplate.
All right.
If there are other, let's deal with further questions at this point.
Okay.
We'll take additional questions, and then I'll entertain the amendment, okay, so that we can draft it. Additional questions, members? Representative Pigman, for additional questions.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. The other question I had was regarding line 211, which is under section 5C. This regards to the summary of findings by the expert who's doing the examination. I wondered in 5C, it asked the clinician to explain how the child would benefit from competency restoration in a community or secure treatment facility. Is that versus some other alternative, or is that a justification for just competency restoration in general? I was confused by that point.
Are you on the STRICAL, Representative? Because I don't find that in the STRICAL. Are you referring to the the bill as it stands or the STRICAL?
It's amendments in the STRICAL, line 211.
211? I'm sorry, I misread your, didn't hear your number. Okay, I see. A statement of how the child would benefit from the competency restoration services.
Okay. Could you repeat the question? Because I think I do have to defer to Department of Children and Families for their expertise on that answer.
It's unclear to me whether we're justifying the competency restoration by location, community or secure residential, versus some other option, or whether we're justifying competency restoration in general. I was confused by what we're asking the clinician to answer in that circumstance.
Okay.
Would someone from the department like to come in and address that?
I'm Sally Cunningham. I'm the Director of Mental Health Treatment Facilities for the Department of Children and Families. And I would say actually it's both. It's to make a statement about how they would benefit and also to comment on the placement option that would be more appropriate.
Does that answer your question? Thank you. Further questions, members? Further questions? Do we have the amendment? I think I'll proceed into public testimony while we await the amendment.
Great.
Do we have public testimony? Would DCF like to make any public testimony on the bill? No, at this point. You're waving in support, I would assume, since you are vested in the bill. Okay, now having no public testimony, let's take about a 3-minute recess while we await the amendment. And we'll stand down for 3 minutes.